Blog Talk Radio.
Brought to you by P4P Muscle Productions and Entertainment, the number one drug-free athlete sponsorship foundation in the world. Following under the teachings, don't trust me, trust my hustle. The ringleader of this show and conductor of this machine is Kaylin Lend Your Ear Patterson. Sit back, relax, and turn up your volume to P4P Real Talk.
Hey everybody out there, it's been a different kind of week, a different kind of day, a different kind of life, but hey, that's life and we still gotta live it. So, you know, this program is sponsored by P4P Muscle, the number one drug-free sponsorship foundation and opportunity in the world. You understand that? And if you are a drug-free athlete and are looking for a solid foundation to stand on and a vehicle to drive your goals, check us out at p4pmuscle.com. And now, let's talk. This episode isn't a redo. I hope nobody thinks that. This is we actually had Matthew scheduled for a previous show, but there was a lot of technical errors, a lot of things that were just getting in the way, and it just seemed like no matter what we did, we couldn't get things set up right, and it's just one of those things with technology. I mean, I've been listening to radio shows, and they say things drop, and I'm thinking, well, somebody could have done something to fix it. They should have been able to see these things before they happened. Well, the beauty of technology is the first thing to go bad is technology, so you know, it is what it is. And, well, just to give you an idea of Nancy's background, that she's been really big in the NASP community. And I know some of us are just coming on and learning about competing and learning about just actually showing up to shows and learning all the ins and outs. And there's some organizations that have been out there for a long time. And they've been actually setting the groundwork for people like us to compete and make sure we can get out there and do our thing and chill and look our best and actually, you know, have the best venue so everything kind of works out to where you can bring a family and you can enjoy the atmosphere and you can enjoy the show. You know, now more and more shows are getting better. The promoters are really, you know, involved with it. It's just a lot of things that are constantly improving with the shows and with that comes from people that have a passion. Maybe the same passion you have now as a competitor will be changed as you grow in the business and you finally see that, you know, I'd like to do more. Many people want to become judges. They feel like maybe people don't understand the judging, so they want to have a part in that. There's all kinds of things that happen you know, we go along with competition. And one of the things is, other than promoting, is actually becoming, you know, a promoter that actually delves into the actual, you know, basically the setup for everything that's going to happen in a show, on a show, around a show, and basically make sure that the competitor is taken care of, the audience is taken care of, venue is a good venue. There's so many things that go into basically the things we seem to sometimes take advantage of because unless you've been to a bad show, you don't know a good one. Unless you've been to a good show, you really don't know what you're getting into if you go to a show where the makeup just wasn't what it was supposed to be. And it's a painful reminder, you know, there's a lot of growth that needs to happen in the industry, and there's a lot of people that still need to learn. You know, thankfully we have seminars, thankfully we have so many other things that happen to basically address the needs of the competitor, but there's still some growth in the industry that has to happen, And there's plenty of people that are willing to take that step up and make that growth happen. And thankfully, people like Nancy exist. And, you know, she's going to do all she can to, you know, make it an ever-growing thing. I mean, we've had break after break of getting better competition. I mean, just in the time that I've actually seen the sport grow, the competition is just really, really getting fine-tuned. And, honestly, there's no such thing as a small show. Maybe not many competitors are showing up, but the caliber of competition is definitely improving. And it's interesting to watch. It's really nice to watch everything that's happening. It's really nice to watch everything that's going on. And it's just good to see all the growth that's happening, but it's, you know, with the way things are going now, it's just really nice seeing where it can go. And I think that's the window that makes me smile, because you start to realize, wow, you know, this is something special happening right now. It's not just special for the competitors, it's special for the audience, it's not just special for the audience, it's special for the promoters, it's not just special for the promoters, it's special for the organizers, because they get to see, you know, this is what it's supposed to be, this is what everything is supposed to be turning out to look like, where you don't have, there's going to be headaches, there's going to be, you know, bumps on along the road. There's going to be things that basically seem like they can stop what's happening. But I don't agree that it'll kill it. I think we've got a great growth happening, and this is a special time to be competitive. It's a special time to be any part in natural bodybuilding, because there's so much room for growth. There's so much out there that can change and for the better, and so many things that are happening, you know, on the better side and on the organization side, where everything just can be so amazing, so great, and so right, where, you know, you don't have that fear other than, you know, actually stepping on stage for the first time. You don't have that doubt, you know, about the competition. Everything seems like it's getting addressed right at the right time, where everything can fall into place, where we can actually have a show just happen. And I mean, with the level of competition that's happening, that's a plus. Everything just seems to be right where it needs to be for everything to fall in place exactly how it's supposed to. And I don't know about you out there listening, but I know for me, that's exciting. That's a reason to get goosebumps. That's a reason to make those workouts better, to work just that little bit harder, to open your mind just a little bit more. Whatever you need to do to make sure that you can do your part to make this as special as it should be. And we look for other people and we say, well, you know, what could they do? And I'm saying, well, what are we doing? You know, everybody wants somebody else to do something to make things right. I say, you know, you look at the promoter and say, well, the promoter could have done this. And I'm looking at you and saying, well, as a competitor, what are you willing to do? How are you willing to address the needs of natural bodybuilding on your end? So the promoter in your organization has that same wherewithal to do just as much for you if they see you trying as hard as you say. Because it's not one-sided. Everything has a dual end. And we got to start stepping up to the plate as competitors, just like we ask them to step up as promoters in the organization. What are you willing to do? What are you willing to push yourself to make this better, to have it connect with the crowd, to have everything line up like it should, because it takes a lot of work. And, you know, I can just liken back to when my mom used to have Thanksgiving. And I know a lot of competitors competing, so, you know, forgive me for the reference, but this is just something I used to think about, you know. I said everybody's out there doing their thing. So, who's going to help set up? You know, is my mom going to have to do everything, or is she going to get some help in that? And it's a lot. It's just a lot happening where, you know, all right, everybody gets to sit down and eat, but you still have the preparation that needed to be done. You still had everything that had to be addressed, and it seemed like all the work was on my mom. And being a son, you know, I'm a little, it used to be a little frustrating because, you know, that's your mother and you love her, and you don't want to see her worn out and everybody else basically reaping all the benefits. Am I doing enough to make sure that she does? You know, because that's your mother. I'm sure your organizations feel the same way and the competitors feel the same way. Everybody's got their own end about what they're doing. But nobody's really coming together to make it all work out right. Who's willing to do what? What's willing to be done? That's what you got to start asking yourself. And if you can have people like Nancy doing what she's doing, then what are you willing to do to help her? Ponder on that. Because we all want to get better. We all want to do our part, but we all have to be better to do our part. And I think I'm just about right connected with Nancy now. So hopefully we can get this show started in the right way. I know you're just dying to hear from this woman, just like I am, because it's been so many days in between, and it's so crazy. I tell you, you just gotta let everything walk in. Oh, my goodness. Almost tripping for now. All right. I think things are just about set up. I think things are just about in place. And I think we are just about ready to go. So, Nancy, can you hear me? I can see you there. I can see everything's in place. And I think we are just about ready to go. Well, Nancy, just bear with me, because I can see your number, and for some reason it's not linking you over to me, but I'm sure it's ready to kick in a minute. Well, everything's in place. Everything that it should be. I can hear her phone, and I just don't see her name anywhere. It's enough to drive you mad. Just not understand what is going on. Well, the gremlin has decided to come at our show in a nice and nice way about it, but it does take time to get this stuff worked out. And hopefully, next show we won't have all this headache to get going. I'm just not understanding why. But if there's nothing else, you learn patience. Nancy, can you at least hear me? The worst thing ever in radio is dead silence. And that's what I'm keep having to do. Just to try and get this thing worked out. Well, there's so much I'd like to talk about. There's so much that needs to be said. And I just know this one. Okay. Here's my shot. Okay, Nancy, if you can, go ahead and call in. You should be good. Radio show. More and more and more we learn. More and more and more we grow. Gotcha. Nancy,
I'm here.
Okay. Please introduce yourself, and I'll let you take it from there because I've talked enough.
All right. Well, thanks for having me on the show, first of all. I really appreciate it.
You're quite welcome.
And I'm glad we could connect. So as far as you were talking about the promotions and getting involved in other parts of the sport, P4P has definitely done a lot for all of natural bodybuilding with all the support they've given over the last few years that they've been involved with it. So we all owe them a huge thank you for everything they've done for natural bodybuilding.
Well, thank you for saying that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, the sponsorship opportunities and their great products. Their products are great anyway, but the fact that they're willing to support the natural at a higher level really has helped a lot of promoters and other people have the ability to do more at their shows and give more athletes. And I know with the Naturals, there's just so many different federations and so many different things going on that it does make it hard to compete with the MPC because the MPC just has so much, their numbers and the supplement companies and all the support. So we're really happy that P4P has taken a stand on promoting and supporting natural bodybuilding because that's what all of us want to see. And although we're all different, we are all kind of doing the same thing, just, you know, few minor differences in organization, testing, and those things.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was really surprised with the P4P because one of the things they did that shocked me is they went exclusively with the natural competitors. And that was unheard of to me because, you know, everybody was basically, if you didn't have the enhanced look, you weren't getting in the magazines, you weren't getting the sponsorships, mm-hmm. and you weren't getting the support. So that was really groundbreaking in itself.
They found that the grassroots marketing where people who actually use the product and are willing to endorse it maybe works better because there are so many different companies selling. You know, they have a lot of competition too. And although products aren't all the same, if you have somebody that's natural that using the product and endorses it, they're able to reach the people they want to reach.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think,
yeah,
I mean, it seems to have worked for them too. But it's, you know, they have to, their products are good, and there's not all products are created equal. So they have good products, and then the athletes are going to know because they've been trying so many different ones. As natural athletes, I think people with the protein powders and with some of the other stuff try more supplements because they need that kind of help with the nutrition part. So it seems to have worked well for them, and it's definitely helped a lot of promoters, especially because they have sponsored so many natural shows.
Yes. And, you know, now from your side, you know, it's watching the competitors and everything that's going on, and as it starts to increase, you know, I'm – you know, especially with social media the way it is, it's kind of disappointing when you see the competitors that didn't, you know, because we got some people that really, you know, put all the information out there. You know, I'm going to get my pro card and I'm going to win this show. Then they get to the show and they realize, you know, there's actually a competition that's going to happen. And then they basically blow up the show and the organization because they didn't.
When it doesn't go their way.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, that is unfortunate. I mean, but with there's a few things that have happened over the last, you know, 15 to 20 years with natural bodybuilding. And those things have led to many of the things that have happened today. But, you know, if you go back in the history of natural bodybuilding, when the WMDF was the only pro natural federation, to get a pro card was much more difficult, and it was really a very small elite group of athletes that held pro cards. And then as new organizations popped up and new, and even within the WMBF with their whole expansion of giving every show a pro qualifier, now you have different levels, even within the pro ranks. There's an elite group that's at the top that any show they go in, they're going to be competitors. But there's a lower level pro that probably wouldn't be pros 10 years ago. They would still be in the amateur ranks trying to get pro cards. So the, you know, you hear both sides of, you know, this isn't good or it's, you know, but it's just what has happened as the sport has evolved and there's more people promoting. And the other part of it is that people do not tend to travel to compete. Like when I won my pro card with the WMDF in 95, and when I won my pro card, there were 6 shows you could go to in the U.S. that year. So I traveled to North Carolina to compete. I'm from the Boston area. I traveled to North Carolina to compete to try to get my pro card. But today people don't want to do that. Like it's very, the shows, what I have seen for amateur shows, they're much more regional. You're going to get, you know, if you have a show in Massachusetts, you'll get people from the New England states, and you may get one or two people to travel, where, you know, back then, because of the limited number of pro qualifiers, people traveled from all over to go to those 6 events. And the events were bigger and more competitive because everybody was trying to get the same thing.
Yes.
So, and now with some crossover too, like for example, the WMDF will take somebody who has an IFPA pro card because our drug testing is so similar and the criteria to get a pro card with them is very similar to ours. So somebody from with an IFPA pro card can compete in a WMDF pro event. And the same goes the other way. The IFPA will take WMDF pros to compete in their events. So that opens a whole other bunch of shows between the OCB and the NAMDF. So, you know, I know people we have had a lot of requests that, you know, can we take everyone? And we don't take everybody because some of the organizations haven't been around long enough that we feel that the pro status maybe is not, they're not going to be at the same level. So sometimes that's not the case, but very often it can be. And the second part of it is that if our drug testing is different, then it's really, we really can't be reciprocal, or we can't go back and forth, because the criteria to compete in one isn't the same as the other. So that's where we've kind of found that the IFPA and the WMDF are most similar in those ways, mm-hmm. and more comfortable taking their athletes. And the NAMBF at one point was a qualifying organization for the WMDF, you know, with Fred Rowlett. And so that was an easy one to say, you know, we used to take their the people that qualified for pros in their show anyway. So it made it pretty easy. But, you know, I would hope at some point that there will be some consolidation.
Well, you know, you touched on something that I was talking to a promoter about a couple of weeks back, Jason Kyman. And, you know, we were talking about how some of the looks at some of the shows where these guys were winning, and, you know, for the criteria of a pro qualifier, you know, I've always said if you're the best person in the building, then you should win. But there's sometimes where the best person in the building doesn't look like a pro yet. And
right.
So I understand what you're saying when you say that, you know, it's some organizations where you'd have to say, well, hold on, we want to see who you're sending. Because I would
right.
be so hurt to see someone step on a stage with someone of a Martin Daniels caliber and then standing next to a guy that's basically cardioed himself to stage with a pro card. So,
right.
you know, I get what you're saying with that.
Yeah. So it's, you know, we've only been over the WMDF a little over a year ago. And I've learned a lot over that time. Also, you learn, you know, like in different areas of the country, different parts of the show are more important to competitors. So that's kind of interesting. In some areas mm-hmm. that, you know, people are more interested in the pre-judging and the night show is just a extra thing that they have to do. They don't care about it, that, you know, it's not as well attended. In other areas, mm-hmm. it's the opposite. The pre-judging is like, you know, there's nobody in the audience. And then at the night show, they're sold out. So it's very interesting when you go across the country and how the perspective of not just the competitors, but the audience. And the shows, you know, I found with my own show, it was getting so big that it was just so long that it was a lot to ask people to be there to see a family member. If they wanted to go to the pre-judging and they wanted to watch the final to the end, they could be there, you know, well over 12 hours. So this year I did try a new format, and it went over very well. I separated out the novice part of the show and ran the novice as its own show. So I had mm-hmm. novice everything, novice physique, novice bikini, novice figure, novice. So there were no pro cards. People kept saying to me, if you don't offer pro cards, nobody's going to go. It's, you know, that's a mistake to do that. But I wanted to try it just to see, because I figured, you know what, I'm going to see what happens. And we had mm-hmm. we had 140 competitors. It was a really nice and easy and smooth show. When I did the competitor meeting, every single person was listening to me because they had never competed. So they wanted to know what was going on. So that was an interesting concept. Because as people go on competing, they kind of do their own thing, and then you may be in their way, or you're not doing things the way they want to. But it was really nice. And then the second part, you know, 2 weeks later, I did my regular open and pro show with no novice mm-hmm. classes. So that ended up 160 people. So rather than have 300 people that I had to deal with in one day, we had a 140 show and a 160 show. And, you know, it worked out, and it was, I think, better for competitors, better for audience. I think people enjoyed it a little more. Mm-hmm. Where it gets tricky is when shows start getting up in the big numbers. So you either have to cut people, which that's never, you know, that's nobody likes that, even yeah. though it makes it a little shorter. You know, it's very disappointing for people that have prepped for a long time to do a show, and then they find out they're not going to be participating in the night show because they didn't make the cut. So, mm-hmm. I've never been a big fan of that. I know sometimes you have to do it, but I always feel bad about that because I know how hard it is just to get on stage. And, you know, you want everyone to have that opportunity and that time on stage to show what they've worked so hard for.
Mm-hmm. And, it, you know, so, it has to be a bad feeling being, you know, that you know, like just being a competitor, you understand all the work and everything else. So I can imagine how that has to feel on your heart.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's actually kind of funny in an ironic way, but, you know, I could do it more easily to pros because they've competed enough, and if they're not ready and they're not going to win, they kind of accept it a little better than maybe. But the beginners, you know, you want them to have such a good experience that they want to keep going. So you don't want to ever put bad taste in beginner or novice people's mouth because you want them to enjoy it and want to be part of it because it is something that the more you do, the better you get at it.
Mm-hmm.
And the best person, you know, the top pros in the world, if we looked at their pictures when they first started, they don't look like they do now. So it is something that you can, you know, no matter where you start, some people start at a higher level, but they still are going to get better. The more they compete, the more they practice the posing, the more they're used to being on stage, the longer they train. As natural athletes, the longer we train, the better we get because you get that muscle maturity. So,
yes. Yeah,
so it is, you know, the people that are in it for the long haul continue to get better. And the people that are dedicated to training, the people looking for the pro card and then looking for the pro win, probably not going to happen. It very rarely happens that way that you have people go that quickly through. So, you know, it's just, it's the nature of the sport.
And thankfully, we've been able to shut down some of the crying. Because, you know, to me, it's we talk about the professionalism, but then it's like when it's time to show it, somewhere down the line it breaks down, and you're like wondering, well, when did you plan on being a pro? Because I could think if you didn't have a pro card, you'd at least want to be a pro in spirit there in mind.
So long ago, I came up with this, and it's a person's true colors come out in defeat.
Mm-hmm.
So with anyone, if you start thinking about different athletes in defeat, a person's true colors come out. The person that is a champion that has that off day, like we can give you an example, not even an off day, but like when Martin Daniels has competed and doesn't win the overall, he shakes the other guy's hands and he goes back to the drawing board and works his butt off and makes sure the next time he comes back better.
Mm-hmm.
You never hear a complaint. He just, and that's his, you know, that's how he is. Brian Whitaker is another one. I've never heard him complain ever. And there have been close calls that have not gone his way.
Mm-hmm.
But he just goes back and keeps grinding it out because he knows he can get better. So that's for a lot of these top guys and women. I think knowing if they personally know they can be better, that's enough to drive them to go back to the drawing board and keep working and keep trying to improve and come back with a better physique the next time. It's always easy to blame things on other people, but it's a little harder to do the self-reflection and say, well, what could I have done better?
Well, yeah, actually, with, you know, coming from a competitive background in other sports, you know, I think it's not that you learn to take a loss. It's just knowing that you can do better. And I think any competitor, I think that's what shows the spirit of the person is when you can look inside and say, you know, did I really give my all? I mean, because sometimes you give your best and the person's just better. I mean, nobody wants to think about those things, but that's the honest to God truth. I played above and beyond, and I'm like, man, I can't believe this is going this well, and you're still losing by 40, you know? So those things happen, and I'm not, you know, I can, it's not a good loss. It's one you can live with if you did your best. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you're saying mm-hmm. right there. Because I don't think it's any different right. in a bodybuilding show, because basically your playoffs is the gym. I always said the right. Pro Bowl is basically the stage time.
Bonus. But the one part about the bodybuilding and all of the categories that we judge in physiques is that you do have that human element in the judging, where it's not like, you know, you lifted the weight and that means you won. It's mm-hmm. there's a panel of judges that also have to be, you know, and I can tell you just from a recent show I had, and a bikini competitor asked, it was a 3-4 vote. Three judges had the person first and four judges had them second, and the winner, the other four judges had, you know, so they were basically a split decision. And mm-hmm. she said, well, what can I do? And I'm like, you know what? This one I really have to attribute more to a judge's preference. These judges preferred this look over, you know, over your look. And because mm-hmm. there were four of them, you know, it just didn't go your way. It's not like I'd change anything major. Sometimes that can happen. And that's the one that I think is harder for people to accept.
Mm-hmm. But it's still something that you can grow on, because, like,
right.
you know, what's it saying? Don't leave nothing up to the judges.
Right.
You can do the lifestyle. I think if you just, because for me, and I can tell you from the grind that I've been doing, every time I step off stage, it's time to go work more. I don't think
right.
I've ever said that's enough. You know, this
yeah,
is the
right.
level I need to stay on until I'm done. I don't ever think mm-hmm. I've said mentally, well, that's the goal.
Well, that's why you're still going and you're still competing and you're still improving. So that's when, you know, people will ask about, should they keep competing? And, you know, that's a great question. If you're just going through the motions and you're not, then obviously it may be time, but, you know, if you have specific things you're working on in the gym and you're going to do. One of the things you mentioned earlier on that I did want to bring up is, like, getting other people getting involved in different parts of the sport. And there are mm-hmm. so many opportunities for people, you know, if they're not competing and they wanted to judge or they want to be a support person at a show. Promoters are always looking for good people to help out. So if anybody listening is in that position that they want to get involved in something different, definitely reach out to some promoters or, you know, myself or other people in the sport, because we do a number of training seminars for judges. We have test judges at shows, because that's how the process would go to become a judge, that you take a judging course and then you do your two test judge events where you would go to a show and test judge, and we would compare your scores to the panel. And then after that, if the scoring is good at those two events, then you would be eligible to judge an amateur event. To judge a pro mm-hmm. event, it's a little bit more involved. But it is a great thing to do for competitors. It definitely helps them look at the sport very differently and look at the whole way they prepare very differently.
It also wakes them up mentally, where they have to understand,
mm-hmm.
you know, it really isn't that easy. And it's, you know,
no.
you,
well, you're
I
right.
think
yep.
unless people start understanding the research and the criteria, they really don't understand what a judge is supposed to look for.
Right.
You know, because
right.
I've said 100 times, I've seen backstage lights out and basically on stage no light at all. Because, you know, there's
I know.
Just no,
yeah,
yeah, the pose is bad and everything else just falls apart after that.
Right.
How do you,
no, that's...
when you have to explain that to somebody after all the judging's done and you're, you know, you're at the after party and you have to explain that, because I've seen where the mom and the dad were sitting there saying, you know, this isn't right. I can't believe you've taken this from me. You know, and
yeah.
my daughter or my son looked amazing, and you're saying that they didn't win.
Right.
Explain that. How do you do that in a way that can get them back where you don't have them broken, where they don't even want to compete?
Right. Well, you know, that for myself, when I judge, I do take a lot of notes when I'm scoring so that I have pretty much a breakdown of how I have that person ranked compared to the other people. Usually when it's, you know, if it's like you're going for first and second and it's close, I actually score each shot so I can say I have them ahead of you on front double bicep, front lat spread. You know, I say the specific shot that I have the person, the other person beating them. The other thing is the way that we do our scoring is that we score the symmetry round. And so if you know, you had the person ahead of them on the symmetry round, that's a big portion of the score right there. But to keep them going, you know, that's where you have to work with their trainer, whoever their trainer is, how the trainer responds to the placement has a lot to do. Some of the athletes don't even know. So, you know, first time competitor goes in and they think everything's great, and then they get fourth place, and maybe it's a super competitive class. They're happy, but then the trainer's emotions get in the way that the trainer thinks that they should have placed higher, and the trainer can really affect the athlete so much. But the best trainers that I know, they don't react to placement. They kind of take it all in and deal with it later. They're not going to show their emotions to the client, even if they think the client maybe should have placed better. But with a lot of the trainers in my own area, you know, they'll call me after and say, hey, you know, what did you think? What can we do to do better? And then you can go through it with them. And I think the athletes hearing it from their trainer may respond better. Then, like you said, the mom and dad at the after party, they're mad. You know, that's the worst one that you have to deal with if you're a judge. But, you know, obviously you prefer to go the route of, you know, discussing it with the trainer and trying to keep the person on track and keep them going. But, you know, I think that the learning the criteria is huge. And I will go as far as saying 50% of the people who compete do not even know the criteria they're being scored on. And so when they ask the questions and you go over the criteria, a lot of times that alone is eye-opening to them. Like, oh, I didn't know we got scored on that. So, you know, the people that come from trainers that are very involved in the sport, obviously those trainers know the criteria for each organization because that's not even the same. So the criteria for each organization is a little different. So with competitors or trainers looking to compete, you really have to do your research so that you know the criteria for that organization and how they're going to score. But a lot of people, that alone is enough. And once you give them what the criteria is, like, okay, you were scored on this, and this. And then they're like, oh, okay, I got it. Okay, I'm all set, thanks. So we are trying to do a lot to educate. We're in the process of getting a new website up, which will have a little more information on the judging with pictures as examples, showing the criteria that we're scoring on. And I think for us, anyways, that will be helpful. In some areas, in most areas, there's a pretty good network of trainers that know the criteria that we use within our scoring and the system that we use. But it's always good, you know, for somebody looking to get involved to check the organization website and to go through and to read the criteria that they're going to be scored on and read what's required of them as a competitor. That's always something that you want to be as educated as you can before you get out there and put yourself out there to be scored and judged.
And yes. Oh my goodness. Yes. Because, you know, it hurts. Like when you see the people that prejudging and you know, they could place better, but it's just something that they weren't taught and you can't get to them until after judging. It's like, well, dang, you know, because it's you really want that day to be special for them, and they did bring the physique where they could have a special day, but it's just something missing, and they don't.
Right. Like, when I do my judges meeting, or the competitors meeting, I always make sure to point out that it's not always the best physique that wins. It's the person that shows it the best. That shows the best physique. Because there are people that just, you know, the way they present themselves, they look 100 times better. And there's people that are the other way, like you're talking about, these people that are unbelievable, but maybe not prepared for the posing and the presentation part. And they're not able to show their physique as well. And so you can't judge based on potential. They can't judge as if, well, if they did this on their pose, they would have looked better. You have to go based on what they actually do on stage. So that is one of the tougher things as a judge, especially when you have beginners that are just starting out. But, you know, it's something that, again, they can work on, and they're going to improve in a matter of weeks just by practicing. So, you know, when people ask about doing the multiple shows, if you're in your all-time best condition and you did everything right with your posing and everything else, then maybe doing the show the next week, the only difference is going to be you're maybe going against different people on a different panel. But for people who are not as experienced with the posing and maybe not as experienced with the contest details as far as the tanning and wearing the right suit and getting the hair and makeup and all that other stuff, for them, competing in multiple shows back-to-back a lot of times makes a lot of sense, because they can improve a lot in a number of weeks just by learning the little details.
And the nerves are gone, too, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just getting the bad out of the group. Because I've even seen that. Just somebody bad in your ear and telling you things that just basically aren't true, just a flat-out lie.
Right.
And you know, I'm thankful now that we have more coaches that care. And I'm sure that's got to be great for you, too, where you have the people in the arena that should be in the arena, instead of that debacle where you had just crazy people with their hand out taking the people's money and killing their life. I mean, because you figure if your metabolism not doing much.
Right. Yeah, no, there are a lot of, I mean, that is the one thing with social media that has helped a lot of really great trainers have the opportunity to get some recognition and to expand and be able to help more people get involved with the natural side of the sport.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and
yeah, that's
a lot of the bromance is gone too, because, you know, there were certain things. You know, it's just certain things that should have never been introduced to natural bodybuilding, as far as diet, as far as, because I said it's not an enhanced arena, so the recovery, so the metabolism, everything is different. And I said, you know, it was frightening when I heard some of the things that people were saying, and I'm just thankful that, you know, just from the sporting events that I had done were, you know, common sense played a role. But if you figure if somebody's putting blind trust and, you know, they're seeing what I would say results in question in quotation marks, but it's like they see a change, but it's not the change that's helping.
Right. No, you're right. You're right. So there's a lot of good things happening, but lots of opportunities for people to get involved, and lots of really, really, really good trainers throughout the country that really can help get somebody from the gym onto the stage.
Yes.
And that's
they don't
a good step
to
go from. No, they do a lot of online, and there are some that still do the, you know, see clients, but quite a few can't just based on the numbers and where they live and all the other stuff. But a lot of very highly educated people in our industry, which is awesome, because, you know, people are doing it the right way and they're doing it a healthy way that they can do forever. And that's why you see competitors 60 or 70 years old. We just had the Hercules in New York, and there was a 70-year-old competitor in the show.
And looking good.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely.
They're not stepping on stage. They're looking good.
Right.
I'm really impressed with that speaks to what you were saying about the muscle maturity, because some of the things they can do with their physiques.
Yeah.
You know, I said not talking about a 70-year-old. You're talking about somebody with just good muscle bellies, and they're stepping out there with just, oh my goodness, you have to be impressed.
Right.
So what, now we've asked what the coaches can do, we've talked about, you know, what you're looking for. As competitors, what do we need to do to improve the show?
Well, I mean, the competitors, probably the biggest thing is follow the rules, first of all, you know, as far as giving, I've been very fortunate here with, you know, people respecting schools and respecting school property, but there are places in my area that won't rent to bodybuilding shows because competitors have gone in and totally destroyed the schools. So, you know, I always like to remind competitors to be respectful of the venue, because we do want to be able to go back. You know, competitors that get their stuff on time, like before the registration deadline, that's very helpful to promoters. I've seen over the years promoter disasters where people are taking registrations, you know, up until the day of the show, and always a recipe for disaster, because it's not fair to the people that sent their stuff in on time, and it usually holds up and delays the start of the show. It's very difficult for a promoter to get all late applications. So that's definitely something that competitors can do to help the promoter. I mean, most people pick a show out 6 months before they're going to compete in it. And those same people will wait until after the registration deadline to send an application in. So that's a little bit hard for promoters, and especially promoters that are running on a smaller budget, because it could affect the trophies, it could affect splitting classes or not. And promoters in general, or at least the ones that I work with, they want this to be a great experience. They don't want it, you know, they want everything to go smooth. They want the competitors to enjoy it. So when you get bombarded with, you know, 20 or 30 applications after the registration deadline, it does make it difficult to run a smooth event. So that's one of the big things that competitors could do, you know, to help out promoters in general, is get the stuff in early. And we do most of our communication through email. So as long as they give an email address, they're going to get all the updated information on the show, which is, you know, you send out all the information so they know when they're competing and they can tell their family and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, that's pretty much it. You know, the big shows people are going to, you know, like our biggest show is always the WNBF World Championship. And that show people plan in advance. And we get a lot of foreign athletes in that one. So they are always sending their stuff in early. Like, they have everything in very early because it's such a big trip and such a big plan for them to get over here. But for some of the other events, or the smaller events, those are the ones that people tend to wait, or maybe are last minute. And even if you are on the fence, not sure you're going to do it or not, at least touch base with the promoter so that they have an idea, like, okay, this person might be coming. Because it does make a difference with trophies, purchasing trophies, and splitting classes.
It's a lot of planning. There's a lot of planning that goes into that. And I don't, you know, and like I said, I think a lot of people think the show is supposed to be just spot on. And when you walk through the door, the red carpet goes out and God opens up the heavens and the angels come down and float you to the stage. You know, and I want the competitors to understand that, you know, there's an onus on us as well, not just you know, everything's supposed to be lined up. You got to put the ducks in a row because you actually help line them up yourself.
Right, Right. You know, the other thing is with most of the drug tests, it shows there is a polygraph test.
Mm-hmm.
And here, I schedule the polygraphs as I get the applications in. So it's interesting that I will get late applications and they have like one time that they can polygraph test. And then you have to tell them, look, you know what, your application is late, first of all. And second, mm-hmm. that time has been gone for a month. It was gone a
yeah.
month ago.
Or more.
You know, they all want 7 o'clock on Friday night before the show, after they get
mm-hmm.
canned. You know,
exactly.
So, you know, that's another thing that I think a lot of times people don't understand is that if the show has 200 people, that's 200 polygraph tests that need to be scheduled. So if you know you have a tight schedule and you have a limited schedule, you really need to get that stuff in early so that you can get all your stuff booked. It's very stressful for competitors to have to do so much at the end. So I always recommend, especially like first-time or beginner competitors, we start testing a week before the show. You know, try to get in then. Go in, even though it may seem inconvenient to drive out on a Saturday and get a test, go and do it so that it's over with so you don't have to think about it all week leading up to the show. So
mm-hmm.
there's little things that competitors can definitely do to make the whole process a lot less stressful.
And that's what I was asking about, because there's
yeah.
so many things that I can't believe they couldn't make that time. And, you know, they got 24
right.
hours in that day, and I'm thinking there's over 24 competitors. So what are you going to do with those
right.
hours?
Yeah.
Right. So
right.
that's exactly what I was asking, because these things come up and they seem like little things, but if you're pushed
right.
for time, there's nothing little about it. And the last
right.
thing you want is somebody that's basically, you know, helping you out, getting their butt ringed because, you know, so-and-so got here late and he wants to get his polygraph because so-and-so is 2 minutes late on a scheduled
right.
time they're supposed to be there.
Right.
It's like, no, that's not how
right.
it works.
No,
and
no, it's
go ahead.
Yeah, it's quite a process. It's a lot of coordinating.
Mm-hmm. It's a great deal of coordinating. And then, you know, I said it's a juggling act at a circus on a trapeze wire, and you got to sit there and do all of those things and still try to get the elephant across the rope, and you got to
right.
still find a way
right.
to do it. And then,
right.
you know, but I just, it's so many things that it's in the dark because it's like it's not talked about because it's at the
right.
end where we don't want to stress the competitor out, but shows like this are something we can get it out there.
Right.
And they can understand, yes, there is more that you could do to make this show
no,
better.
Right, there is definitely. And you know what, I actually, whether I get feedback that's good or bad, I like getting feedback, even if it's bad, because if I can do something better, I want to do it better. So I've gotten good suggestions from people that maybe didn't like the way we did certain things. And, you know, I'm very open to that and we'll try things and try to improve things. I think what people have to realize, anyone who promotes, they're putting a ton of time into it. They're
yes.
never going to get, even though you may see, oh, look at all the people in the audience, they are never going to get paid for all those hours they've spent preparing for this big event. And I don't know one promoter that is doing this with the idea of like this, I don't care about the athletes. People promote because they do care about the athletes and they want to do a good job, but they're also human and there can be things, unforeseen things that happen or things that they just didn't realize, you know, they may be new to promoting. So I think that the athletes have to remember that the promoter really is trying to do a good job, and so they should, anything that they have issues with, they should definitely give them feedback, good and bad, good to
mm-hmm.
hear it, and it makes the promoter better. If you didn't like their show, there's nothing wrong with telling them, I really didn't like the way you did this, or this, and the promoter may have a reason for doing it that way, but at least you've given them the opportunity to either explain why they do it that way, or
mm-hmm.
you give them the opportunity to take a step back and say, hey, you know what? I never thought of that. This person's right. Maybe it would be better if I did it this way or that way. Because there are
exactly.
many different ways to promote a show. But I think, you know, that competitors just have to remember that the promoters are in it for the right reasons. They're trying to give the athletes a great platform to be able to compete and show what they've worked for.
That's right. And like on the other end of that, I'd like to say is that, you know, it's great to have support as a competitor, but just make sure you got the right support, because there's, you said, there's certain things that you could delegate and put in somebody's hands so that that phone call can be made, so you are scheduling the right poly time. You are scheduling the right tanning time, because, you know, there's people that really want to help, but they just don't know how. And then there's people that just don't care to help. They're just riding the bandwagon because you're actually looking like somebody that can compete. So, you know, there's a lot of things everybody can do to improve. And I say that if you're not improving, then you're not really doing much of anything other than showing up at a gym and sweating. But without the improvement, I don't really see, I couldn't even really call it a competition.
Right.
It's basically just maintaining. But that's, to me, that's like saying, you know, street ball compared to NBA. It's a it's a night and day thing, you know. I don't think there's so much, like I said, there's so much more we can address if we just start doing, instead of saying, well, Nancy Andrews should do this. No, if I do this and I bring that to her, and you've already seen that I put in the work, and I've done what I'm saying, and then it's a lot easier for you to hear, because it's not the person that's basically gym ready and not stage ready, and you're saying, all right, you want to run things, and you're not even prepared yourself.
Right. Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah. But social media is good, and I love it, because there are people that have serious, diligent, I mean, just downright great questions. And then there's people that are just saying, well, because my people didn't win, this show sucks. And I'm saying, what did you do to make sure the show didn't suck? Because I've seen where, you know, it's maybe 40 competitors, but you got 40 great competitors. And that's a great show. Or you can have, okay, let's say you get the numbers and you get people to show up, and it's just a bunch of gym rats that basically had enough money to step on stage. Who's going to have the better show? You know, as a competitor, sooner or later, we have to sit there and look at ourselves and say, we can do better. And I'm not saying that, you know, we got to do it all. Nobody should have to do it all. But I'm saying that there's so many, how many, there's so many streets to get to Chicago. Which one did you take?
Right.
You know, and all right, let's say you get to Chicago, and did you bring the right car? You know, because if you're supposed to be picking somebody up along the way, you sure can't be on a two-seated motorcycle if you're going to be taking 12 people. So, you know, this is real talk, and we got to get it out there, because, you know, that information needs to be said. And you know, it can't be just burying you with all the guilt, when you know that the person that is complaining really didn't bring a good package. Because a lot of times, honestly, you and I both know that you'll see a picture and say, boy, that's a great picture. But you were at the live event, and no, that's not how they look. That photographer is great. That's basically what it is. It has nothing to do with what, you know, he just caught a great angle, or she caught a great angle and had them looking amazing. But if you're at the venue, that you know that's not the case.
Right. Yeah, no, that happens quite a bit with pictures where, you know, one person's not completely in the pose so you do have to be there to really see it live. And that's why we require anyone that wants to judge to do the two test judge shows, so that they've done live judging. In the course, we do mostly pictures, which is good. Mm-hmm. It's good to be able to, you know, stop that moment in time and point out things about different physiques and what you're looking for. But the live judging, you really need to experience that to be able to have the eye to judge a show. You can't just go by pictures.
Yes. Oh, my goodness, yes. Because I'm telling you, there's been some shows where I've been at, and you look, and you say, wow. And then you see them in the picture, and you're like, what happened? You know?
Yeah, it looks different. Just, yeah, like, no, I know.
Yeah. And those are things that have to be brought up and improved on our part. So, you know, we can have the shows that make you shine the way you wanted it to, because you don't have to stress as much pre-show and during show and post-show, because we've done our end. Because I think that's when that show is just great, when everybody's lined up and, you know, nobody knows exactly how to be a professional if they're an amateur, but they can be striving towards it. And I think those are the things that need to be addressed before we actually have that, you know, that blow-away show that makes, you know, that becomes the one of legend, you know?
And the only other one little bit of advice I would give to competitors is that if somebody is new to the sport and is trying to compete or, you know, go from gym to stage, that they do a little research and really try to get some information. And I would recommend interviewing at least 5 different trainers, whether they're online people or just to get the information and to hear a little bit, because I see very often where somebody will want to compete and they go with a gym trainer that is not necessarily a trainer that's got expertise in preparing someone for stage. The outcome may not be what they expected, and they're disappointed and, you know, feel like they weren't prepared properly. So for anyone looking to get involved with competing, if you have to seek out 5 people, hopefully you're going to get one that's going to have some experience getting a natural competitor from gym to stage. And you'll, you know, ask them about the types of diet that they're going to put training, the length of the diet, how long you would need to diet to prepare for stage, all those kind of things, because it's not all going to be the same. And it's just one of those things, just being a good consumer, you're going to learn a lot by doing this interview process with the trainers. And some people have said to me, oh, I don't want to question them. But if you're hiring somebody and you're putting that much time and energy into getting ready to go on stage, you certainly want to know more about the person before you commit to spending, probably for most people, at least 6 months prepping, you know, maybe a little less, but normally it's a 6-month process. So for new people, that's really important to take the time and do the research and interview a number of people. Don't just go with the first person that says they'll train you for a show.
That's right. Because honestly, I've seen people, like I said, that have the best intent, but they don't have any stage presence. They don't have any posing presence. They basically have been doing the cookie cutter, I'll get you to lose fat. And like I said, because you see different, it doesn't mean it's stage ready. That's just gym ready. It looks, my goodness, you look amazing.
Yeah,
I can't believe it.
Different.
And then you get on stage. Well, not even get on stage. I see the heartbreak stage when they look around and the people start to take the robes off or hoodies.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
They see, good Lord. Yeah. And that's like, oh, wow, yeah. You had the gym trainer, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, not knocking gym trainers. Some of them are the competitors. You know, they've been competing.
Oh, right.
Years.
No. Some are, but that's where I'm saying you really have to do a little bit of research. That's all.
Mm-hmm. And, well, it's open and eye, Nancy. That's what I need. It's great that everybody wants to do, but how do we do better? I think that's the question, because what I've seen in the last 3 years is just phenomenal with physiques. And like you said, it's called good diet, good nutrition, people not wrecking their metabolisms in the off season, and the bulking, thank God, is a dinosaur. So I'm really happy with that, because I think my mom was a nurse, and she'd always told me about because I wanted to bulk for football, and then I wanted to lean out for basketball.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they were always back-to-back, and she said, son, that's not going to work. Not being my child. And I was like, well, why not? And she said, anytime you have rapid weight gain and rapid weight loss, it's incredibly hard on your body. And I never understood that, because, you know, I felt fine. But when you start thinking about the drag that you're going through, that you're used to, that normal that you think is okay, it's not. And it's incredibly hard on your internal organs, and And it frightens me that people who send texts and posts and comments saying, you know, I gained 30 pounds in 3 days.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, wow.
Not
wow.
good. No.
Terrible.
No, it is. But that's why, you know, for many it becomes a lifestyle. And even when they're not competing, it changes your whole outlook on healthy eating and proper exercise and all that. So it is a very healthy lifestyle if you do it the right way. But the like you're talking about, these ups and downs and drastic weight gain and weight loss, not good, never good. That's very stressful on the body. So,
But
your
you know,
mom
now
was right.
With the seminars and everything that you guys have been doing, and everybody's you know stepping up, and it's making a big difference, because now you know the lives improve. I don't want to say life, the lives.
People
are actually coming when they come to the show. You actually recognize them, and they're not competing, because that would always be the thing that would make me laugh. It's like I see you on stage, and then you talk to me in 3 weeks.
Yeah, you don't know who it is.
So, Nancy, thank you so much. I'm glad we got the chance to talk.
Yes, I'm glad we did too, and thank you for having me. And you know, I'd be happy to come on again. And you're doing a great job, and we really appreciate all the support of natural bodybuilding from you and from P4P. And we look forward to working.
It's a passion. It's a true passion. And
it is.
That was something where I looked, and Mike Newman looked, and we both said, you know, we can do more. And that's what I was talking about with the support factor. I didn't know what I could do, but I knew I could do something other than doing nothing. Because that was the worst thing in life.
Right. Well, thank you for helping educate others and helping others get into the sport, because it is a great thing. It's a great thing to be part of.
It is. It really is. And I thank you for dealing with the headaches of all the bashing, all the complaining from our side.
It's all good. Yep. It makes us better. Those things make
us
better.
It really does.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and have a good night.
You have a great night as well. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks. Yep.
Talk to you later. Just an excellent job. I'm glad we finally got a chance to talk. Next coming up, we have the Glock and Mr. Petaway for Thursday. And for the ladies, we got Stacey Boyer. Major's going to be dealing with her. And I've met Stacey, a wonderful, wonderful woman. She's just a ball of energy, and I just love being around her. She's a joy. It'll be nice hearing about her, and she's got her own book. And I just hope everybody understands now more than ever what we can do to offer, what we can offer. You know, everybody's got their own parts. Everybody's got their own thing they can do to improve everything that we're involved with, because if you're involved with it, you're a part of it. And if you can improve on it, then do it. And Nancy just laid out the format for a great show. And hopefully the next time you see her and compete, or see a promoter and compete, you keep these things in line and in mind, and it happens. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you again, Nancy. Great job. Thanks for dealing with the technical hang-ups. And I just hope everybody enjoyed the show. Good night.